Stone & Company is delivered by TriStar, moving 102.5, 106.3. The game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Thanks to the offices of Amanda J. Gentry, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studios. So I watched all of the second half tape of the Titans offensively against the Colts yesterday. And so I can tell you what happened. I can't tell you why it happened. Neil Tyson deGrasse, you know, an astrologist, I think? Neil Tyson deGrasse one time said he was asked about the formation of the universe. And he said, I can tell you how it happened. I can't tell you why it happened. And I always thought that was pretty interesting. He can tell you about the formation of volcanic rocks and the heat and expansion of the universe and everything else. But he can't tell you why.
And that's what everybody wants to know.
Everybody wants to know why.
Is why.
So the reason why the Titans offense struggled, in my opinion, so mightily in the second half against Indianapolis was in large part an inexperienced right tackle and Ryan Tannehill's struggles. Now, we know the right tackle's inexperienced. That's nothing new. We know the right tackle was a third-round pick and that normally if guys are good enough to start right away, they get drafted in the first round and that's going to be so. We know that. Treylon Burks, and again, it didn't hurt them because the mistake on that play came from Tannehill, not from Burks. The actual costly mistake came from Tannehill, not Burks. But Treylon Burks should know better than to try to get up and play when he's hurt. But he's a rookie. Tannehill's not. Been in the NFL for 10 years. And I can't tell you why Ryan Tannehill, in my opinion, was the reason why the team struggled in the second half. All I can tell you is that he threw a bad ball to Kyle Phillips off of his back foot that was short on a third down. He had two missed plays where guys were open down the field. He had one illegal shift. He had one where he didn't set his feet before he went to throw. He had one that could have been his fault. It could have been a play design. Ryan Tannehill did not play well for the Titans in the second half against Indianapolis, which is crazy because Ryan Tannehill was electric in the first half. Ryan Tannehill, 15 of 12, 103, two touchdowns, and a 134.9 quarterback rating in the first half. Ryan Tannehill, again, 103 yards in the first half, which puts him right on pace for those 200 yards that we say, hey, 200, 220, something like that. Ryan Tannehill finished with 137. He threw for 34 yards in the second half. And again, missed guys open down the field. We talked about missing Burks. He missed Woods. He missed Westbrook Akine and Hilliard right at the sticks on a first down or on a third down that would have been a first down. But now I'm going to venture into the thing that I don't know if this is right or not. I'm being completely honest with you. This is my opinion as to why Ryan Tannehill played so poorly in the second half. Why Ryan Tannehill's decision-making was so questionable in the second half. Remember what happened to him when he threw that first interception against the Bengals in the playoffs last year?
He was different after that.
Something that I loved about Tannehill that Marcus really struggled with when he was the starter and then Tannehill came in and he really didn't play like this in 2019 was Tannehill throw an interception and then he'd come right back out. And he didn't look phased at all whatsoever.
Short-term memory.
Tannehill throws the interception against the Bengals to start the game. And it is tight butt syndrome the whole rest of the game for Tannehill. And I think it hurt him. And I think ultimately that's why he had the game that he had. Ryan Tannehill was electric in the first half until the very end of the first half. I was so disheartened by what happened at the end of the first half from Ryan Tannehill. I was so disappointed in Ryan Tannehill. Been a starting quarterback in the NFL since 2012. He knows better than to run in the middle of the field with 19 seconds on third down and no timeouts. He knows better than that. Everybody knows better than that. High school quarterbacks know better than that. And Ryan Tannehill knows he knows better than that. And I wonder if that mistake that he made at halftime, if that stewed with him throughout the entire intermission and led to his decision-making in the second half. And what really, really opened my eyes to this idea was after the game, like we can all agree Tannehill messed up, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was Tannehill's fault. There's no gray area about whose fault it was that the Titans didn't kick a field goal before the half, right?
I think that's fair.
I mean, it's not even blame pie. It's not even like, you know, well, Burks didn't get out of bounds on the play before that. And
well,
Brable
who's in charge of the clock?
Tannehill.
The quarterback.
The ball is in Tannehill's hands, regardless of whether when they called that timeout or the fact that Burks didn't get out of bounds and they had to call the third timeout. Like, the ball was snapped with 19 seconds to go, and Ryan Tannehill is the one with the ball in his hands. Ryan Tannehill knows he has to throw the ball away. So I think we can all agree that Ryan Tannehill knows he can't run, be short, not clock it, because it's fourth down. Like, he knows better than that. So it's not Vrabel's fault. It's not Downing's fault. It's not Burks' fault. It's not my fault. It's Tannehill's fault. We can all agree. Tannehill asked after the game, remember when Tannehill blew the Bengals game? And he knew he blew the Bengals game.
Oh, yeah, he knew it.
And I knew he blew the Bengals game, and you know he blew the Bengals game, and we all know he blew the Bengals game. And remember how Tannehill refused to take responsibility for blowing the Bengals game?
He kept using we and us and our, never me.
Tannehill asked after the game about what happened at halftime.
I don't see what's right. You guys are trying to get points at the end of the first half.
Oh, we got stopped short there, got into a situation where we run the field goal on, and I don't know exactly what happened there, but we weren't able to get it on in time.
The exact same as the Bengals game.
We weren't able to get it on in
time. Yeah, you know, I don't really know what happened there. Yes, you do. And I love Tannehill. I do. I think he's a great guy. I really do. Like, I'm sure that I will never become friends with Ryan Tannehill. I'm not overly concerned about that, but he is a guy that I could see myself wanting to be friends with. He seems like a great guy, a great teammate, somebody who I would assume is always there for you. Just a nice guy. Just a great guy. But for some reason, when he screws something up, he has a really hard time admitting it. And I don't know what it is, because people like me, like, I screw things up all the time. It's very easy for me. I'd rather just move on with it.
Mm-hmm.
And just say, yeah, I screwed that up. And move on to the
next. That's on me, my bad.
Move on.
We're going to Washington.
And so I don't know what it is about Tannehill that massive screw-ups like blunders, he really has a hard time taking the blame for. But the only thing I can tell you, this is just my opinion, and it is not rooted. Like, I can tell you that Tannehill missed Hilliard and missed Westbrook Akine over the middle on that third down because I saw it. It's on the tape. It's there. He had a clean pocket. He didn't throw him the ball. I can tell you that he missed shots down the field to Woods and Westbrook Akine, and I can tell it to you because it's on the tape. And Vrabel even said it yesterday. I can't tell you why the Ryan Tannehill that was spinning the ball like Drew Brees in the first half. I mean, that first half of Tannehill, that's as good as he gets. That is on fire, electric Tannehill. That's the Ryan Tannehill who had the efficiency of Joe Montana in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
That's who that was.
And that's what we've seen in the first half.
That's what we've seen in the first halves. And that's what we've seen from Tannehill pretty much the whole season. I mean, Tannehill's played great. That drive against the Giants to move them down the field to kick the field goal, just because they missed the field goal doesn't mean that it doesn't count that that was a good drive from Tannehill.
Well, Tannehill's not the one that missed the field goal.
Tannehill has played great this season, in my opinion, except for the second half of the Colts game. I think it was the fact that he screwed up the end of the half.
That he just can't shake it?
And I think there are two things at play here. Number one, dude, you're going to have to move on. Like, as disappointed as I was in it, I'm still disappointed by that. You know, a guy makes a mistake, drops a ball, guy misses a field goal, guy, like, okay. A 10-year NFL veteran who makes $30 million doesn't know how to operate the clock? A game manager doesn't know how to game manage? And it cost them 3 points right before the half in a game in which 3 points would have completely changed the entire outlook of that second half for Indianapolis. I mean, that is so disappointing. But you got to move on. Like, he's got to move on. The concerning factor is that he didn't move on. I truly believe. I don't think, you know, and again, I didn't watch the first half to see what the Colts played defensively. I saw everything the second half was single high safety. I saw multiple times there were guys open and he didn't throw it. Quarterback errors. Breaking the huddle with 13 seconds. demanding the ball from Ben Jones on a clap while Robert Woods is still in motion. That's an illegal shift every time. That's basic football. How? Tannehill's not stupid. So the only thing I can come up with is Tannehill could not get over what happened at the end of the first half. That's all I can come up with. And I'm going to say this, like, that can't happen anymore either. Like, what happened at the end of the first half, that's not a team thing. That's a Tannehill thing. And I'm not going to sit here and, you know, yell and scream about it. But, I mean, Ryan Tannehill's been playing this game for 10 years in the NFL. You know, it was funny on Hard Knocks when it was like, I don't know any of the divisions. And Matt Moore asks him, who's in the NFC North? And he's like,
the Giants?
Giants. Like, it's funny then, but not knowing that with 19 seconds, you watch Tony Romo call games, and every time that he or Aikman, I mean, Tony Romo's like, they got to get to the line with 13 seconds to call a play. If they don't, they have to throw it to the outside, and they have to, Jim. Oh, my God, Jim, they have, because that's how quarterbacks have to think.
And I do think that is how Tannehill thinks. Tannehill knows how to manage a clock. He just didn't do it in that drive.
And I think he was so disappointed in himself for
that he couldn't get rid of
it. Second half.
Yeah.
615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Let me just say, that's a theory. I don't know the why of why Ryan Tannehill was so good in the first half and so bad in the second half, and the bad was on him. You know, some of that bad was on him. And I do owe an apology to Vrabel on this. I want to get to that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
So it's 3rd and 1 coming up here. No timeouts for Tennessee remaining. So you got to be mindful of the sideline here.
Yeah, and this is where, that's what they've been doing, throwing it to the sideline, because that's not where they live, but that's where you have to live in these situations. So sideline routes, get out of bounds.
3rd and short, Tannehill maneuvering, gets hit, and is short of the first down, and that may take us to halftime. And if it's 4th down, you can't spike it. Field goal unit hustling to try to get on. They're not going to get this off.
No.
They weren't set regardless. A flag comes flying in. A lot of hectic moments here right at the end. They're not all set. That's why that flag was thrown. You saw Corey Levin hit the deck.
Prior to the ball being snapped, the offensive team was not set. That's a 5-yard penalty and a 10-second runoff and the end of the first half.
I still can't get over that. And that was totally Tannehill's fault. I mean, Ryan Tannehill knows better than that. And that I find to be disheartening, but I do feel like his disappointment in himself for that is why he missed guys open down the field in the second half. And again, just going through the notes about the guys he missed down the field. And this was, you know, I owe Vrabel an apology, and I'll explain why in a second. But on one of the pass plays, Ryan Tannehill has guys open down the field. Colts show blitz. They bring 6 against a single high safety. And with that, Tannehill, that was the one where he threw the bad ball to Phillips, where he saw Phillips and he delivers the ball short and behind him. And he threw it off of his back foot when he had a clean pocket. And he probably should have made that throw. There's another one where, against the jumbo package, he throws it short to Derrick Henry, who gains 8. But he's got number 15, Westbrook Akine, wide open in the middle of the field. There's one where he throws it short to Derrick Henry. And he has time to throw it short to Derrick Henry. But he had guys open down the field. He had Woods open down the field. He had Burks open down the field. There's another on 3rd and 5 where he ended up running and he was tackled, but he had Hilliard and Westbrook Akine wide open at the sticks. The Titans had to punt. And Mike Vrabel was talking about this yesterday. He was asked by Steve Lehman about Tannehill being 4-0 against the Colts at the Colts. And listen to what Vrabel said. This isn't Vrabelese, in my opinion. This is Vrabel kind of confirming what was on the tape.
You know, we were able to win the rushing battle. You know, we had a better passer rating, and we won the turnover margin. So that's the recipe for winning in this league, especially on the road. And, you know, we'll continue to find and make opportunities. You know, I think that there were some things that we could have probably gotten, you know, and been able to get the ball there. And we'll talk to Ryan about some of those things. But, you know, it was pretty, you know, kept us out of harm's way, delivered some really, really good throws. You know, was accurate, and made good decisions. We just have to, you know, I think there was a few down the field we probably could have had.
So Vrabel's telling you the same thing that I saw on the tape, which is he had guys open. He just didn't throw it. But then there's the dichotomy of what's the number one thing we say, hey, Ryan Tannehill, you have to do this every game no matter what.
Take care of the football.
Don't turn the ball over. So he didn't do that against the Colts, and they won the game. So it's like, I don't want to chastise Ryan Tannehill for doing the number one thing that we tell him, whatever you do, do not turn the ball over. And he did not turn the ball over. And in fact, he didn't even come close to turning the ball over on Sunday against the Colts. And yet at the same time, he did miss open guys. And I just don't think this team can be successful if the quarterback on third down keeps missing open guys.
And there's a difference between being risky and reckless. You know, Tannehill trying to target a guy downfield who's totally open, maybe that's not necessarily risky, so to speak, but it's riskier than just dropping the ball off to Derrick Henry or holding on to the football. And there's a difference between that and being reckless or just making dumb decisions, which we've seen Tannehill do, especially last year. So, I mean...
But aren't they all somewhat considered the same? Like, for instance, one of the balls where I felt like he could have fitted in underneath the Westbrook Akine, there was a safety above him. Now, he was about 10 yards away from Westbrook Akine, but there was a safety above him. Now, Tannehill has a split second.
That's risky, not
to
reckless.
To decide, you know, can I get that ball fast enough right to Westbrook Akine before the safety can get there? Because if the answer is no, and he throws it, then it's like the Eli Apple interception in the Bengals game, where as Tannehill throws the ball to Westbrook Akine, the DB hits him right there as the ball gets there. Ball pops in the air, and Eli Apple intercepts it. The Bengals win the game. You know, like, so, and that's where, like, if Tannehill's number one mantra is no matter what, don't turn the ball over, I can see some of those, you know, if that's what I'm beating into his head, like if I'm the coach, mm-hmm. and I'm beating into his head, don't turn it over, don't turn it over, don't turn it over, he is not going to want to throw it down the field unless he's got somebody wide open in which he trusts that there's not even a single high safety over there that could jump over and take it.
And that's the difficult dichotomy, because if you are jamming into his head, do not throw a pick, then he's going to miss a whole lot of wide open guys.
Now, when Hilliard and Westbrook Akine are 5 yards in front of him on a third and five, and he's got a clean pocket, and they're standing in the middle of the field, that ball's got to come out. There's no excuse for that one. There is no excuse on that little drop-off. Like, there is no excuse not to hit one of those two guys.
At that point, not throwing the ball is being reckless.
But I think it all goes back to it. And I, you know, we'll go back to that one play where the Titans threw it to Derrick Henry, and I said, look, it could have been the play, could have been to throw the ball to Derrick Henry, or it could have been the play to throw it down the field, and Tannehill panicked and threw it to Henry. But again, seven in the box, Gilmore man for man with Westbrook Akine, and on the play, I mean, I do wonder, as they got the guys down the field wide open, and Henry was there against a linebacker, was the idea throw it to Henry and let Henry beat the linebacker and have the receivers clear out the defensive backs. So it's Derrick Henry versus a linebacker. You throw the ball to Derrick Henry. He makes the linebacker miss. And now here's Derrick Henry in space. And when Derrick Henry's in space, maybe somebody can get in front of him and take him down. But very rarely do people get in front of him and take him down. Or was it, those guys are open down the field, but Tannehill's nervous about throwing the ball deep, so he checks it short to Henry. I don't know.
That's 615, the question.
615-737-1025. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What do we have?
Ron texts in and says, the Titans have only had one wide receiver in team history that was added to the team and was successful and was our number one receiver, and that's Nate Washington. Everybody else that we've added to this receiving core has been garbage.
So you know what's funny about that take exactly?
What?
Does it matter who the wide receivers are if the quarterback doesn't throw them the ball?
No.
So, like, this morning, I was listening to the Midday Show, and they were talking about, like, you know, do they need Corey Davis? Does this team need another wide receiver? And somebody at the gym today asked me, you know, what do you think the Titans should go after Odell Beckham? And
oh, boy.
I'm like, it doesn't matter. We can crap on Westbrook Akine all we want to do. But if he's open and the quarterback won't throw him the ball, then does it matter if it's Odell Beckham and the quarterback won't throw him the ball? Does it matter if it's Jerry Rice and the quarterback won't throw him the ball?
No, you're just paying them more money.
And I'm just using this game as an example. Robert Woods. I thought Robert Woods and Westbrook Akine played great football yesterday. And nobody's talking about it because Titans didn't throw the ball, you know, for 500 yards, and they didn't catch it for 800 yards, and they didn't. But I thought both of them played really good football yesterday. And I was stunned. You know, we were talking about Stephon Gilmore. Mm-hmm. I was stunned with the ease which with those guys ran right by Stephon Gilmore. And how Stephon Gilmore had to hold. Had to hold. Because he was getting blasted by those guys. And it didn't matter. So I get the text, the idea about, you know, the receivers, they're no good, Jared. And again, drive two, play one. Eight in the box, play action. Tannehill has plenty of time. Everybody is open. These are my notes. Everybody is open. Woods is open 20 yards down the field. Burks is open 25 yards down the field. Tannehill throws the ball short to Derrick Henry. And then I write, unless the plan was to get it to Henry versus the linebacker, and Woods and Burks' job was to take the defensive backs with them. But they were open down the field. Guys can tell me, these receivers are no good. Woods was open down the field. Just didn't throw the ball. And again, Vrabel said it. We saw things in which he could have thrown it down the field, and he didn't. Now, we're glad he didn't turn the ball over, but we need to get with him so that he takes those shots. So, no, it's not about the receivers, at least not in this game. And this is the hard part, because all I'm talking about when it comes to Tannehill's poor play and why he played poorly, or not why he played poorly, how he played poorly in the second half of the game, and why the offense was so bad, and why they didn't get a first down in the third quarter, and why they didn't score any points in the second half. The why they were so bad, I don't know. The how. Missing guys that are open, breaking the huddle with 13 seconds, throwing the ball off of his back foot short for Phillips. That is only applicable to this game. And so people will say, well, you're saying that Todd Downing is the greatest offensive coordinator because you went over his second half play calling and you decided, well, I actually have the percentage of how many good plays I think Todd Downing had yesterday. In the second half, I think it will stun people. But that is only for this game. But I will get to that stat next because I was kind of surprised by it. 615-737-1025. Caroline, tell us about the Caesars Sportsbook Report.
It is time for the Caesars Sportsbook Report. Now remember, if you haven't started with Caesars yet, your first bet, it's on Caesars, up to $1,250. Just download the app and use the promo code RADIOFULL, one word, RADIOFULL, and then wager. Bet your little heart out. And if you win, then congratulations. But if not, don't worry about it. You'll get that stake back as a free bet. Now, if you're looking for something to place that first bet on, there's an odds boost going on with Caesars. Today, the Cardinals, Braves, Brewers, and Phillies all win at plus 1,600 odds. Pretty good odds, worth your money. And if you don't like that one, you can create your own parlay. Just do it with the Caesars Sportsbook app. Open to new users in Tennessee who are 21 or older. If qualifying bet loses, bet amount returned as a credit. Must use within 14 days. See Caesars.com/promos for full terms. Gambling problem? Call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Caesars Sportsbook. You bet. You get.
Henry lined up as an up back. They fake it to him. They throw it. And they get it to Okonkwo. First down, inbounds, timeout by Indianapolis, but that salts the game away, and the Titans will move to 500. What a play call with Henry almost like a fullback there.
Yeah, he's right here, and Okonkwo is going to go right here. And you know what? This is the second time they put him in the backfield to get that man-to-man matchup, and you see him right there getting that first down and being smart enough, the rookie, wise enough not to go out of bounds.
I love the play call. You know, I knew they'd be all packed in there, obviously. You know, we were able to get a first down, then it was going to seal the game. So, you know, excited to hear that play call come in. And Chig did a great job of getting his depth, making himself available, and then getting down, staying in bounds, and into the game.
There you go. That was the play call that won it for him. And even if you're Todd Downing's biggest critic, you got to give Todd Downing credit for that play call.
Oh, for sure.
Now, I went when I watched the game back yesterday before we did the midday show. I generally speaking, you know, if I think something's a good call, I'll write good call down. If I think something's a bad call, I'll write bad call down. And then if I don't know, what I'll do is I will highlight that play. And then when the coach's tape becomes available, I'll watch the sideline camera and the end zone camera, and I'll try to figure it out. One of these, I didn't know if it was a good play call or not. I sent it to one of the top college football analysts in America, and I was like, what's happening on this play? And, you know, so I can get a good sense of that. I try to, you know, I've sent it to coaches before and been like, hey, what do you make of this play? You know, trying to figure out what I don't know. And then trying to take that and fairly assess what happened on Sunday. Not the Skip Bayless thinks that LeBron James stinks no matter what. So no matter what LeBron does, Skip's going to find the negative in it. I do not believe in that. I do not believe in narratives. In the second half, when I watched the game on Sunday with my dad, watching the game like we always do, I thought, man, Todd Downing, this isn't working. Whatever it is in the first half that allows him to score all those points, I mean, he must stick his head in an icebox at halftime or something, because I don't know what the problem is here. I went back, looked at the plays, wrote it down, watched the coach's tape. I had one predictable call, a running play on the second series that was a bad predictable call where Grover Stewart pushed back Aaron Brewer. He only weighs, you know, 60 more pounds than him. Pushes back Aaron Brewer and makes the play in the backfield. That was the only one. Other than that, out of a possible 19 offensive snaps, I had 7 good offensive play calls. That's 35% in one half. The second half where they didn't do much with the ball, 37% of the time, I thought Todd Downing had a good play call and that it didn't get executed. And I used the one play on third down where Tannehill got sacked as a perfect example of that. Because I know there are going to be people that when that happened, and maybe I felt this way on Sunday too, I can't remember how I felt in that particular instance, but Tannehill got sacked and they probably threw their hands up and said, oh, Todd Downing, there he is again, and Downing's screwing it up. And by my estimation, that play call, if Nicholas Petit-Ferrer sees DeForest Buckner on the loop, as opposed to trying to double-team Quiddy Pay, if Nicholas Petit-Ferrer reads that properly, it's a touchdown to Dontrell Hilliard. I thought it was a great call. Robert Woods burns Stephon Gilmore. Safety goes over to help on Woods running down the field. Hilliard loops in underneath. It's a short little pitch and catch. Hilliard cuts up field, and there is nobody on the left side of the field, and he will run with it all day. But Petit-Ferrer didn't make the right read, and Tannehill got sacked. 37%, 7-1. Good play calls to bad play calls. I thought Todd Downing called a great game. I shouldn't say a great game, because I didn't scout the first half. I mean, they scored 24 points in the first half, so they must have done something
right. It was fine.
They had, I mean, honestly, they had 27 points. Tannehill screwed up the play before the half. But 37% in the second half, I thought Todd Downing was great. And I think it's only, the one thing I always say about this show, well, fair. This is not agenda-driven. This is not, I hate that guy. I like this guy. This is going to sound crazy. I like David Poyle, the guy, fine. Guy needs to start making some better moves for the Predators. But this is a show about being fair. And I thought Downing was great in the second half. Regardless of whatever, you know, the fact that the offense didn't score point, I get that. But I thought Todd Downing was excellent.
And I think the crazy thing here, too, is let's say, I mean, last week against the Raiders, Todd Downing did not call a good second half. But Tannehill was fine in the second half.
Sure.
I thought he played a fine game. So that's the astonishing thing, is that there is a continued overall theme week after week after week, but the reason why, or the details of the second halves are completely different. Because if Tannehill was bad in every second half, it'd be much easier to diagnose.
I did not scout the Raiders second half like I scouted the Colts second half. So I can't speak to it like that. But as far as just the Colts second half, Downing was not the problem. 615-737-1025. Add that to the list. Let's go to your phones. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com.
Herb in Kentucky texts in and says lack of offense in the second half was also a problem. While they were great on first and second down against the run, they gave up numerous first downs on third and long passing, denying their own offense a chance to get back on the field.
So I think that the problem with that was that the defensive line got tired and that the defensive line was on the field for 32 minutes,
something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was 34 minutes they were on the field for the game. They were on the field for 19 minutes in the second half.
God.
I mean, you can't
They're
do that
gassed.
To them. They can't do that. And so here's the reality about the Titans' defensive line without Harold Landry and Bud Dupree. And this is where Shane Bowen deserves some credit. And Mike Vrabel, too, and everybody else. It's smoke and mirrors. Like, the Titans' defensive line has two legitimate NFL starters and a third guy who I think might be, and then good depth pieces. You know, Simmons and Autry are legitimate above average players. Tart might be. You know, I do wonder, Tyre Tart's been on this team for a couple of years, and he's always been kind of a rotational defensive lineman, and he's gotten better as time's gone on, but I do wonder how much of Tyre Tart's success is like Jason Jones' success on the defensive line when he played next to Albert Haynesworth. Because Tyre Tart does play next to Jeffrey Simmons. And Jeffrey Simmons was fantastic on Sunday against the Colts. And so was Autry, and so were those other guys. But as far as pass rushing, without Dupree in there, it is night and day difference. Bud Dupree's in there, first series of the game, sacked the quarterback, fumble recovered by Dupree. And I can't explain it because I'm a guy that truly doesn't buy into all the extra stuff about, you know, this guy makes everybody better even though he doesn't get any sacks, which was the argument for Clowney for all those years. And yet, every time I see Bud Dupree exit the game, I see a completely different defense. And so, clearly, he's important. And clearly, they better get that hip figured out. Somebody call up Dr. Bird and get that figured out because they need Bud Dupree. But also, they were on the field too long. I thought defense played fine. I thought defense was fine. Defense, in all seriousness, I mean, if they don't force that fumble of Jonathan Taylor, it's probably a different ball game. The way that the Colts were moving the ball. So outside of the fact that I think Farley's completely worthless, I think the Titans' defense is fine. I don't have any problem with the defense. Didn't have any problem with the defense Sunday. What's next?
Another tester texts in and says, I don't think it was David Long Jr. that stood out linebacker on Sunday. The first three games, it was evident our linebackers weren't playing up to par. The standout on Sunday was Dylan Cole stepping in for Zach Cunningham. Long Jr. has missed a ton of tackles in the first three games of the season. Jayon Brown was definitely missed. Dylan Cole with eight tackles clearly was the bright spot at linebacker.
You mean until they benched him?
Yes.
But until they benched him and they put in Joe Schobert?
Yes.
David Long Jr. was fine. Let me just say this. Let me just get this out there. I do not value middle linebackers. And I love David Long Jr. And that doesn't mean that, to me, it's like, and this, I think this happens a lot, which is I say something like, I don't value middle linebackers. And then someone will say, well, what about Ray Lewis? And it's like, yes, the elite of the elite. Who's the best middle linebacker in the NFL right now? Roquan Smith?
I'd say he's up there. I mean,
okay, and how many games does his team win?
None.
Okay. So it's like middle linebacker, it's a different game because you can't hit anybody in the middle of the field anymore. So the idea of what it used to be with those Zach Thomases and those Ray Lewises and the, oh, you want to throw the ball to the tight end over the middle of the field? Well, he's going to get decapitated. Can't do that anymore. So it's a different game. Now, those guys will still make a bunch of tackles because if there's a defensive lineman like Jeffrey Simmons, he's going to eat up blockers, and then the linebacker's going to be there to make the tackle. And some guys are better than other guys, but I would never use a first-round pick on a middle linebacker or high free agent dollars on a middle linebacker if I didn't know that he was a just absolute game-changing player, just like a running back. I don't mind paying Derrick Henry that kind of money. But I'm not paying the average good running back that kind of money because Philip Lindsay can run for 1,200 yards 1 year and then be on a practice squad the next year. And I just go get the next guy to go be the running back of my team. And I feel that way about guys in the secondary that aren't ball-hawking safeties. And I feel that way about middle linebackers. I think they are so dime a dozen in this league. And this week was a perfect example of that. Zach Cunningham, who hasn't even been that good, who makes $10 million bucks or whatever it is he makes, he's out. Dylan Cole and Joe Schobert off the practice squad save the day. I just don't find it to be a valuable position at all.
But it doesn't hurt when you have a good one.
No, but I wouldn't pay for it.
What is like the median salary of a middle linebacker in the NFL?
I don't know. I would not pay.
I have no idea.
So like David Long, so Amani Hooker's making $11 million bucks, right? And that's like,
not, it's a chump change.
It's
but...
not, it's high level starter money. It's not elite, but it's pretty good starter money. I would not pay David Long Jr. more than $7 million bucks. He's a free agent at the end of the year. Yeah, $7 million. Like, I would be like, hey, here's the Danico Autry three-year $21 million contract. Here you go. That's it. That's it. And because I can go get another middle linebacker.
Because you want to put your money into your pass rushers. That's the most important
thing.
I do not care.
I do not care about anything other than the passing game and stopping the other team's passing game. And then I'll worry about other positions. Like, I'll worry about box safety later. I'm not spending two first-round picks on Jamal Adams. He hits people. Like, I'm not doing that. 615-737-1025. Derrick Henry is going to tell you he doesn't care about this. I guarantee you not only he cares about it, but I think their entire team cares about it. We'll get to that coming up next. Right here, Stillman & Company, 1025, 1063 The Game.
How good was it for you to get going in first 100-yard rushing?
I don't care about that. We won. Happy we were able to, you know, make plays on offense and do what we need to do to get a W.
Derrick Henry does not care about his first 100-yard performance on Sunday. It should be noted that Derrick Henry did go over the 100-yard mark. Derrick Henry, I thought, was absolutely fantastic, but then again, I think probably everybody thought that. Derrick Henry, 114 yards. Here was the more important thing. Jonathan Taylor, 42 yards. Now, the Titan players will never tell you that they care about that. Other than, you know, we knew we had to stop the run, and we stopped the run, and we knew we needed to run the ball, and we ran the ball. And they will never tell you, we are so sick and tired of all of the bull crap last year about Jonathan Taylor is the best back in the league, when we, and I'm talking about if I'm a member of the Titans, you know, our guy broke his foot, but our guy was the best. Our guy was the best the year before that. Our guy was the best the year before that. Our guy is the best, and they just kick him to the side, and all they ever do is talk about how great Jonathan Taylor is, and our guy kicked Jonathan Taylor's ass. I guarantee you they're talking about that. I guarantee you that matters to them, and they will never tell you. They will never say it publicly because they don't operate like that. Especially knowing that they're playing the Colts in 3 weeks. They don't operate like that. But I guarantee you there's a discussion about, you know, you kicked that ass. After all everything that they talked, Derek, you went out there and we and you kicked that ass on Sunday. Everybody just talking about Jonathan Taylor. He's so good. And then, no, Derrick Henry's falling off and a foot injury. Oh, yeah, how about that? How they like that now?
But
in his building.
I really don't think that Derrick cares.
Oh, I think they do.
I mean, the Titans,
what did
maybe
Derrick,
there are some guys on that team that are like, yeah, Derrick, you showed him.
I think Derrick cares. Would you care?
Probably.
You're the best at what you do. You break your foot, and all of a sudden somebody else is now the best at what you do because you broke your foot. Not because you fell off. Not because they did anything you haven't done. But you broke your foot. And now you know you're just right back to where you were. And everybody's still talking about this new guy.
Yeah, I'd probably be pretty pissed off.
Okay, remember when I asked
Derrick
Henry?
I just think that Derrick is built different.
No.
Mentally and physically.
What did Derrick Henry say to me at training camp when I asked him if he wanted a reworked contract with the Titans?
Anybody would want to raise.
He looked at me and said, would you want a promotion at your job? Derrick Henry's a person, too. Just because Derrick Henry doesn't give anybody any fuel for anything, and this is why he'll never talk about it. You know, Derrick Henry is the lead-by-example guy. You know, Derrick's not going to tell TD that, you know, TD says, you know, you get your first 100-yard rushing game. Yeah, man, I was so desperate to get back to 100 yards. It's been, I haven't gotten 100 yards since October of last year. He's not going to say that. He's probably thinking it, but he's not going to say it. He's, you know, I don't care about that. We won. We won. And Derek is just like all of us, except he never, ever, ever talks about it. And I'll give you an example. 2022, 4 years ago, Derek had been the backup for 2 years because DeMarco Murray was a starting running back. And we interviewed Nick Saban at SEC Media Days. And I asked Nick Saban, I said, Coach, Derek Henry, you know, is going to probably be the starter this year. You know, how do you feel about that? Knowing, obviously, you know, that he played for him at Alabama. And Nick said, I've been talking to him about this for 2 years. And I've told him to be patient. And I've told him to wait his turn. And he is chomping at the bit. And I've talked to him for 2 years constantly about this. Derrick Henry never said a word to anybody in Nashville that would even give the slight subtle hint that he was frustrated not being the starting running back behind DeMarco Murray. Never even gave it oxygen. Never even gave it a chance to be a story. And here's Nick Saban saying, oh, I've been on the phone with him for 2 years telling him, hey, man, wait your turn. It'll come. Wait your turn.
Well, what was Derrick Henry going to say?
That's my point, though.
In a press conference, get up there and say, yeah, you know what, I'm pretty fed up with this organization for not giving me the ball because I'm the best running back in here and you just don't know it.
When guys want the ball, they'll say some crazy things now. But Derrick's different. Just like, what's Derrick going to do? They're playing the Indianapolis Colts in what? 2 weeks? They play Washington, then the bye, then they play the Colts again. So they're playing the Indianapolis Colts in 2 weeks. You think Derrick's going to get up at the podium and say, boy, we made that guy look like he sucks.
No, but he didn't even say anything about himself. He didn't say, yeah, it was really great to get out there, you know, best game of the season, so on and so forth. It was, we won, that's all that matters. He didn't want to entertain the question.
Right. He didn't say anything about himself. He didn't say anything about anything.
He never says anything.
Which is exactly what he does. But do you think in his own life he doesn't say anything about anything?
I don't know how Derrick Henry thinks.
Of course he doesn't. He's a real person. And because he's, I'm telling you, I bet they're taking such joy in the fact that everybody said all this stuff about Jonathan Taylor, and he averaged 2.1 yards a crack.
Well, and Vrabel told you very, very loud and clear last week, we got to stop the run. Yeah, you know, Jonathan Taylor, we got to stop Jonathan Taylor. He said Jonathan Taylor's name so many times in that coach's show, and could tell that was the game plan going into it. Stop Jonathan Taylor.
That was the game plan because it gave him the best chance to win. As far as the personal stuff about Derrick Henry and how people kind of forgot, just glossed over Derrick Henry because he broke his foot and didn't play better in that Bengals game, that's more personal than, you know, oh, hey, we got to stop this guy. I'm telling you, that I'm sure Derrick probably took it personal, probably didn't make a big deal about it, but because I think that locker room has such respect for Derrick Henry, I think they took it personal too. And again, they will never tell you because that the way that a buttoned up organization is supposed to think is we don't want to celebrate right now because we don't know when we'll play these guys again. And even if they beat the Colts the second time, they will say we don't know when we'll play these guys again. Even though it looks like the Colts are going down the toilet and might not be any good this year, that they'll say, hey, 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 we do not know. 615-737-1025. Poor Treylon Burks. Turf toe, which means he sprained the big toe, which is what turf toe is. He'll be out for a little bit. And I got to tell you, this is a really, really bad sign. And I'm going to tell you why, and people aren't going to like it, but we'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, 1025-1063 The Game. FanDuel Sportsbook is my official sportsbook app. Football season is underway, and so now is the perfect time to download the FanDuel Sportsbook app because it's America's number one sportsbook. Right now, new customers get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000. That's free bets if your first bet doesn't win. Just sign up with the promo code JGM. FanDuel has all of your favorite bets from the money line to point spreads to player props, and you can combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with the same game parlay. With live betting, you'll get updated odds on games that have already started, and you'll get paid your winnings fast. all on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. So sign up with the promo code JGM for your no-sweat bet. That's promo code JGM to make every moment more with FanDuel this season, an official sportsbook partner of the National Football League. 21 and older and present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. Refund issue is non-withdrawable free bets that expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line 1-800-889-9789.